3. Autumn term. B. Bullet. Bullet point 1. The next day, I texted Alid. Then I Facebook messaged him. Then I called him. I heard nothing. And at 7:15 the next evening, I stepped out of my house with the intention of knocking on his door. But his mum's car was gone, and so was he. 2. At the weekend, I sent him a lengthy apology over Facebook, which felt pathetic while I was writing it, and was still pathetic when I read it back. While I was writing it, I realised there really wasn't anything I could do to make it better, and I had possibly just lost the only real friend I had ever made in my entire life. 3. My behaviour throughout the rest of October was more pathetic than I even believed was possible of myself. I cried daily and couldn't sleep properly and got very angry at myself because of both of these things. I put on some weight, but I really didn't care about that very much. It wasn't like I was skinny in the first place. 4. October was full on for schoolwork as well. I was spending most of my evenings doing homework. I had copious amounts of art coursework to do, and we were being made to write English essays every week. I was trying to read some books for my Cambridge interviews, but I couldn't make myself concentrate. I forced myself to read them, though. The Canterbury Tales, and Sons and Lovers, and For Whom the Bell Tolls. If I didn't get into Cambridge, everything I had tried to be throughout my school life would be a total waste. 5. One evening, I saw Alid walking down the road from the station lugging a suitcase. Home for the weekend, I guessed. I almost ran outside to see him, but he would have replied to my messages if he'd wanted to be friends again. I wanted to know how he was finding university. He was tagged in a few Freshers' Week photos on Facebook with other freshers, smiling and drinking and sometimes in a fancy dress costume. I didn't know whether to feel happy or sad, but looking at them made me feel horrible. 6. Obviously, I stopped voicing Toulouse in university, and I stopped doing the art. Alid changed the story so Toulouse was suddenly banished from the city. I felt very sad about that, as if it was me who'd been banished. 7. I got a ton of messages on Tumblr asking me why this had happened. I just said, that's the story. Toulouse's segment was over. 8. I got a ton of messages on Tumblr asking me why my art had stopped appearing on university videos and why I hadn't been posting any drawings lately. I said I was struggling with school stress and needed to take some time away. 9. I got a ton of messages. 10. I almost bit the bullet and deleted my Tumblr entirely, but I couldn't do it. So I tried to stay away from Tumblr as much as I could. 11. On the 1st of November, I turned 18. I expected to feel different, but of course, I didn't. I don't think age has much to do with adulthood. School Francis. Francis, you look so grumpy, said Maya with a laugh. What's wrong? Every day I spent eating lunch with my school friends. Felt like I was walking one step closer to packing my bags, leaving town and hitchhiking to Wales. My school friends weren't bad people. They were just friends with school Francis. Quiet, studious Francis. Instead of real Francis. Meme lover, patterned leggings fanatic, and very close to a breakdown. Because school Francis was very dull, they didn't really like talking to her or care very much about how she was. School Frances, I started to realise, hardly even had a personality at all, so I didn't really blame everyone for laughing at her. It was early November and I was finding it increasingly difficult to be School Frances anymore. I smiled at Maya. I'm fine, just stressed. Just stressed was starting to take on the same meaning as I'm fine. Oh my God, same, she said, and then started talking to someone else. Rain turned to me. Rain always sat next to me at lunch, and I was extremely grateful for this, because she was pretty much the only person who I actually had conversations with. You sure you're okay? She said, in a much less patronising tone than Maya. You look a bit ill, actually. I laughed. Thanks! She grinned. No, I mean... Oh, I just mean you haven't really been acting like yourself. I don't really know what that is. Are you still upset about Alid? She said it so bluntly, I almost laughed again. Partly, I guess. He just hasn't replied to any of my messages. Rain looked at me for a moment. He's an absolute cunt, she said, which made me splutter a mildly traumatised laugh. What? Why? If he can't even think rationally enough to see that you've been his friend for all this time, what's the point in trying? He clearly doesn't care about you enough to value your relationship. You shouldn't have to care either. She shook her head. You don't need friends like that. I knew everything was way more complicated than that. And I knew that everything was my fault. And I didn't deserve any pity whatsoever. But it still felt nice to hear Rain say those things. I guess so, I said. She hugged me then, and I realised it was the first time she had done so. I hugged her back as well as I could from my seat. You deserve better friends, she said. You're a sunshine angel. I didn't know what to say or what to think. I just hugged her. Winter Olympian. Frances, when are your Cambridge interviews? I was walking past the school hall's backstage door when Daniel spoke to me for the first time since September. He was standing next to the stage curtain with a Winter Olympian who had come to give a speech in front of years 7, 8, and 9. Daniel obviously had good reason to be angry with me, and since I wasn't head girl anymore, I had no reason to even be around him. So I hadn't been surprised when he started refusing to make eye contact with me in the school corridors. I didn't have anywhere urgent to be, so I walked into the backstage area. He hadn't even asked his question in a particularly rude manner. December the 10th, I said. It was mid-November, so I had a few weeks left. I hadn't read everything I'd said I'd read on my personal statement yet. I just hadn't had time to prepare for the interviews and keep up with my coursework at the same time. Ah, he said. Same. He looked slightly different from the last time I'd spoken to him. I thought he'd maybe let his hair grow a little longer, but I couldn't really tell, since he kept it swept back into a quiff every day. How's it going? I asked. You ready? Know your stuff about, like, bacteria and skeletons and stuff?
Bacteria and skeletons?
What? I don't know what you do in biology. You did it at GCSE, though. I folded my arms. The nucleus is the powerhouse of the cell membrane. What does the cell membrane do? I hope you know what the cell membrane does. They might ask you. They're probably not going to ask me what the cell membrane does. What are they going to ask you? He gave me a long look. Nothing that you would understand. Good thing I'm not applying to do biology then, isn't it?
Yep.
I suddenly noticed that Rain was backstage with us. She was currently interrogating the Winter Olympian, and I felt a bit sorry for him. He could only have been a couple of years older than us, and he seemed kind of nerdy and awkward for an athlete. Super tall, with massive glasses and jeans that were slightly too short for him. He looked a little panicked at the fact that he had to talk for 20 minutes to years 7 to 9, and Rain was doing nothing to help. Apparently he used to go to the grammar school across town, Alid's school, and now he was here to talk about his success and achievement and stuff. Daniel saw me looking at her, and he rolled his eyes. She wanted to meet him. Oh. Anyway, here's the thing, Daniel continued, looking me in the eye. I need a lift to Cambridge.
You need a lift?
Yeah. My parents are working and I don't have any money to get to Cambridge myself.
Can't your parents give you money for the train?
He sort of ground his teeth, like he really didn't want to say what he was about to say. My parents don't give me money for things, he said, and I had to quit my job because of schoolwork.
They won't even give you money for Cambridge.
They don't really see it as a very big deal. He shook his head slightly. They don't even think I need to go to university. My dad just wants me to come work for him. He runs this, like, electronics shop. His voice faded away. I stared at him, and I suddenly felt really bloody sorry for him. I was going to get the train there, I said. My mum's working. Daniel nodded and looked down. Okay. Yeah, that's all right. Rain leaned over from the chair she was straddling. The Olympian guy looked sort of relieved. I'll drive you guys, she said, if you want.
What?
I said.
What?
Daniel said.
I'll drive you.
Rain grinned broadly and rested her chin in her hand. To Cambridge?
You'll have school, said Daniel very quickly.
So?
So you're just going to skip?
She shrugged. I'll fake an absence note. Works every time. Daniel looked extremely conflicted. It was still very weird to me that Daniel had drunkenly poured out his heart to a girl he has absolutely nothing in common with. Then again, maybe that was why he did it.
Okay,
he said, trying and failing to mask the irritated tone of his voice.
Yeah, that'll be great.
Yeah, thanks, I said. That's really kind. There was an awkward pause for a couple of seconds, and then a teacher gestured from the other side of the stage for Daniel to come on and introduce the Olympian guy, which he did. And then the Winter Olympian walked onto the stage and Daniel walked off. Daniel and I didn't say anything to each other while the guy was talking. To be honest, he wasn't a very good public speaker. He kept losing the point of his talk. I think he was supposed to be inspiring people to work hard in school and explain about sports-related careers. And he seemed to be fairly confident in what he was saying, but he kept throwing things in like, I didn't really get along well with academia, and I felt a bit alienated with school, and I just think we don't all have to have our lives laid out by the grade that we get in our exams. After the guy finished, Daniel and I smiled and thanked him for coming and all that stuff. And he asked if it was okay, and we obviously said it was. He was then whisked off by a teacher, and Daniel and I started making our way back to the common room. As we were walking through the hallways, I asked him, have you been seeing Alid much? And he looked at me and said, you know about us, don't you? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, he doesn't talk to me anymore.
Why? I don't know. He just stopped texting me one day. For no reason. He paused and almost seemed to sway as he walked, as if the weight of this whole thing was about to crush him into the ground. We had an argument on his birthday. What about? I don't know why I was surprised. People move on quicker than I can comprehend. People forget you within days. They take new pictures to put on Facebook and they don't read your messages. They keep on moving forward and shove you to the side because you make more mistakes than you should. Maybe that was fair. Who was I to judge, really? He said, "It doesn't matter." I said, "He doesn't talk to me either." And neither of us said anything after that. Space. "It's getting a bit late, isn't it, Franz?" said Mum, wandering into the lounge with a cup of tea in one hand. I blinked up at her from my laptop. Moving gave me an immediate headache. "What's the time?" 12:30. She sat down on the sofa. "You're not still doing work, are you? You've done work every night this week." "I've just got to finish this paragraph." "You've got to be up in 6 hours. "Yeah, I'll be done in a minute." She sipped her tea. "You keep doing this. It's no wonder you're getting stress pains." I started getting weird pains in the side of my rib cage every time I sat in a particular position. It did, at times, feel a bit like I was having a very slow heart attack. So I was trying not to think too much about it. "I think you should go to bed," she said. "I can't," I snapped, louder than I meant to. "I literally can't. You don't understand. This is due tomorrow, period one, so I have to do it now." Mum stayed silent for a moment. "How about we go to the cinema this week?" she said. "Just a little break from all this Cambridge stuff. That space film came out a few weeks ago." "I don't have time. Maybe after my interviews." She nodded. "Okay." She stood up. "Okay." She left the room. I finished the essay at 1 a.m. and went to bed. I thought about listening to the most recent Universe City episode because I hadn't got round to it yet. But in the end, I was too tired and I didn't feel like it. So I just lay in bed and waited to fall asleep. Hate. I'd been avoiding checking Tumblr for a few weeks. All I was ever faced with was a ton of messages asking me why I hadn't updated for a while, and the reminder that I hadn't drawn anything for over a month. And the fandom scared me, not gonna lie. Now that everyone knew who Alid Last was in real life, the Universe City tag went through a phase of posting and reblogging every single picture of Alid they could get. To be fair, there weren't very many. A couple stolen from his personal Facebook, one stolen from the Johnny R's Facebook page, a blurry one in the street at his university. Thankfully, after a few people made posts about how this was all a disgusting invasion of the privacy of a person who clearly wanted to remain anonymous, most people stopped posting them. Yet, no one seemed to know anything about him. They didn't know how old he was, where he lived, what he was studying at university. Alid didn't confirm anything on Twitter. He just ignored everything, like nothing was happening. And gradually, everyone stopped talking about him and got back to talking about university again, like none of it had happened at all. In general, I started to feel like it really wasn't as bad as we'd all thought. Until the end of November. That was when everything got 100 times worse. The first post to circulate the fandom was a new picture of Alid. He was sitting on a stone bench in what looked like a town square. I hadn't been to Allard's university town before, but I assumed that's where it was. He had a Tesco bag in one hand and was staring at his phone. I wondered who he was texting. His hair had grown enough again to fall into his eyes, and he looked almost like the Allard I'd first met properly back in May. There wasn't a caption with the picture, and the Tumblr blog that had posted it didn't have its ask box open, so the only way for people to criticise the person who posted it was to reblog it, which is what happened. And within a couple of days, the post had 20,000 notes. The second post wasn't even from a university blog. Troiler Fandoms 23756. Hey, so I gave university a go since Phil recommended it recently, but does anyone else think it's, like, super elitist? Like, really, really privileged? The whole thing is a giant metaphor for how crap the writer thinks the education system is, right? There are people in third world countries starving themselves so they can get an education. LMAO. I mean, universe city equals university. It's not exactly subtle, is it? Lol. Dozens of universe city blogs reblogged it with a variety of snarky comments. And I almost wanted to say something myself. It was an absolutely ridiculous statement. Then again, I guess Allard had said something about not wanting to go to university. Hadn't he? Or had he been joking? And then came the third post, from the same person who had posted that sneaky picture of Allard in town. They posted another picture of Allard. It was moderately dark and he was unlocking a door. The words St. John's College could clearly be read on the building's wall, which meant that everyone who saw it would know where Allard lived. This time, there was a caption underneath the photo. Young adult machine. Gonna kill Allard last, privileged prick. He doing bad things. Education is a privilege and he's got no right to make our kids question their way in life. He's brainwashing our kids. My stomach actually lurched while I read it. They weren't serious, were they? There was no way of knowing whether the person who'd written it had been the one to take the picture. I didn't know what to make of any of this. It was all just hate. Internet hate. Universe City was just a story. A magical sci-fi adventure story that gave me a tiny 20-minute period of happiness once a week. There weren't any deeper meanings. If there were, he would have told me. Wouldn't he? Universe City Podcast. Episode 140. Fine. Posted by Universe City. Do you think this is all some sort of joke?
I wonder why you're even listening to this in the first place. Are you just turning your radio on each week to listen to some funny story about silly old radio and their friends zapping a new monster and solving the mystery like we're the bloody 26th century Scooby-Doo gang? I can see you now, having a right old laugh to yourselves while we're here, slowly dying from the city fumes, being murdered in our sleep. I bet you have the power to contact us, but you just can't be bothered. Have you even been listening to anything I've been saying? You're just the same as everyone I knew in the old world. You can't be bothered to do anything.
Guy Denning. Francis, I wouldn't advise putting your entire face on the desk when I've been using henna, Rain said to me during one of our art lessons in early December. I was doing an artist's copy of a Guy Denning portrait, using chalk and charcoal. My art coursework was on isolation. She was applying henna to a papier-mâché skeleton hand. Her art coursework was on racism against Hindus in Britain. I sat back up and touched my face. Did I get any on me? Rain looked at me and made a face of concentration. Nope, you're good. Phew. What's up? I've just got a headache. Again? Mate, you should get that checked out. It's just stress and lack of sleep. You never know. It might be a massive brain tumour. I grimace. Please don't mention brain tumours. I'm an extreme hypochondriac. Might be an aneurysm just waiting to happen. Please stop talking. How are you ladies getting on? Our art teacher, Miss Garcia, appeared at our table like she'd apparated there. I jumped so hard I nearly smudged my drawing. Fine, I said. She studied my drawing and then sat down on the stool next to me. This is going well. Thanks. She tapped the paper with one finger. You're very good at capturing likeness, but keeping it in your own style. You're not just drawing things photographically. You're really interpreting it into something new. You're making it your own. I felt sort of happy. Thank you. She looked at me through her square glasses and wrapped her crocheted cardigan around her body. What subject is it you're applying for at uni, Francis? English Lit. Oh, really? I laughed. Is that surprising? She leaned over the table. I didn't know you had any interest. I thought you'd do something more practical. Oh, like what? Well, I always thought you'd do art. I could be wrong, but you really do seem to enjoy it. Well, yeah, I do. I paused. I'd never even considered doing an art degree. I'd always enjoyed art, but the idea of doing it as a degree, it'd just be a bit useless, wouldn't it? And what would be the point when I got such good grades in more useful subjects? I'd just be wasting my potential. I can't choose a degree based on what I'd enjoy, though. Miss Garcia raised her eyebrows. Ah. I've already sent off my applications anyway. I've got my Cambridge interviews next week. Yes, of course. There was an awkward pause, and then she stood up straight again and said, "Keep up the good work, ladies," before walking off. I glanced at Rain, but she was back concentrating on the henna. She wasn't applying to uni, much to our school's irritation. She was applying for a few business apprenticeships instead. I wanted to ask her opinion, but she didn't really know the extent to which drawing was part of my life, so she probably wouldn't have been able to help. I looked back at the artist copy I was working on. It was a smudgy face of a girl with her eyes closed. I wondered whether Guy Denning went to university, since he was one of my favourite artists of all time, and I decided to look it up when I got home. According to Wikipedia, he'd applied to a load of art colleges and didn't get into any of them. Press play. It was 3 days before my Cambridge interviews when I realised I hadn't listened to an episode of Universe City in 3 weeks. I hadn't looked at Alid's Twitter. I hadn't checked Tumblr. I hadn't drawn anything. It wasn't a big deal. It just made me feel weird.
I thought I enjoyed all this stuff. But maybe I was an academic at heart after all. I kept peeling off layers of my personality, but I seemed to be going in circles. Every time I thought I'd worked out what I really enjoyed, I started to second-guess myself. Maybe I just didn't enjoy anything anymore. Alid and I had been good friends. There was no way he could possibly lie to himself about that. He'd decided to end it and never talk to me again. So why should I get sad about it? He was the one who was in the wrong. He didn't have any right to be angry at me. I was the one who had to go back to being school Francis. Quiet, boring, stressed, tired. He was having the time of his life at university, and I was sleeping 5 hours a night and speaking to maybe 2 people per day. I loaded up an episode of Universe City to listen to, but couldn't bring myself to press play, because I had work to do, and that was more important. Universe City Podcast, Episode 141, Nothing Day. Posted by Universe City. I didn't do anything today.
Every week something happens, and it feels strained. The truth is, old sport, sometimes there isn't anything to report. Sometimes I might exaggerate a bit, just so I have something exciting to say. That time I told you I surfed the BOT22 down to Leftley Square. Well, that was a lie. It was only a BOT18. I lied. I really, really lied. And I am sorry. I feel a bit like a BOT18 sometimes. Old and rusty. Aching and sleepy. Wandering through the city. Lost. Circling. Alone. No gears left in my heart. No code whirring in my brain. Just kinetic energy being pushed gently onwards by other forces. Sound, light, dust waves, the quakes. I'm as lost as ever, friends. Can you tell? I'd like it if someone were to rescue me soon. Oh, I'd like that very much. I'd like that. I'd like that very much indeed.
What else were you supposed to do? At 9 a.m. on the day of my Cambridge interviews, Rain rolled up outside my house in her purple Ford car. She texted me, "Yo, I'm outside." And I texted back, "Out in a sec, mate." Despite the fact that I absolutely did not, in any way, want to step out of my front door. I had the 2 essays I'd submitted to the college in my bag, so I could reread them in the car. I also had a bottle of water, a packet of polos, a few Universe City episodes downloaded on my iPod to calm me down, and a good luck / calm down message from my mum that she'd written underneath a printed out picture of Beyoncé. Before my mum had left for work, she'd given me a massive hug and told me to keep her updated via Facebook messages and to call her immediately after the interviews. That had made me feel a bit better. I was wearing what I thought was a very successful balance of I'm a mature and sophisticated and intelligent young woman and I don't believe that what I'm wearing today should influence your decision. Which was
plain blue skinny jeans, a very plain and normal black jumper, and a green checked shirt underneath. I would never normally wear this, but I thought I looked quite intellectual, yet still sort of like myself. Basically, I was feeling extremely uncomfortable. I put it down to nerves. Rain's eyes followed me as I walked towards her car. "You look very boring, Francis," she said, as I got into the front seat. "Good," I said. "I don't want to scare them." I was keeping my fingers crossed for colourful leggings, or your black denim jacket. I don't think people wear those in Cambridge. We both laughed heartily and drove off to Daniel's house. Daniel lived right in the middle of town, opposite a Tesco Express, in a very thin terrace house that did not have a drive. It took Rain a good 3 minutes to park properly. I texted Daniel. I had his number now, and when he emerged from the house, he was wearing his usual sixth form suit. I got out of the car so he could climb into the back. "Went for the sixth form suit then?" He looked me up and down. I thought that's what everyone wore. "Is it?" He shrugged. "I thought so. I might be wrong." He turned and got into the car. My anxiety about today had multiplied at least 3 times. "Daniel, you're not helping, mate," said Rain, with an exaggerated eye roll. "We're all feeling very nervous as it is." "You?" Daniel laughed as I got back into the car. "You don't even have interviews. You're just going to sit in Costa Coffee for 6 hours and play Candy Crush. Excuse me, I'm extremely nervous for both you guys, and I gave up Candy Crush about 2 months ago." This made me laugh again. And for the first time since we'd agreed to do this, I was kind of glad that I wasn't going to these interviews on my own. The drive to Cambridge was 2.5 hours. Daniel sat in the back with headphones on and did not talk to us at all. I didn't blame him, to be honest. Every couple of minutes, my stomach would flip and I'd feel like I was about to throw up everywhere. Rain didn't try to talk to me that much either, which I was thankful for. And she let me choose the car music from her iPod. I picked some Bon Iver remixes and then read over my essays for 30 minutes before staring out of the window for most of the journey. There was something calming about the motorway. Everything I'd ever done at school had come down to this. I found out what Oxford and Cambridge were when I was 9, and I knew that was where I was clearly meant to go. What else were you supposed to do when you got the best grades in the class, without fail, every single year? Why would I waste an opportunity like this? Unhelpful things. "Well, mother of balls," said Rain as we drove through Cambridge. "It's like they built it out of caviar." It was nearly midday. My first interview was at 2. Daniel's was at 2:30. I was trying not to have an anxiety attack. "Everything's very brown," Rain continued. "Like, there's not a lot of grey. It's like a film set." It was a beautiful place, to be fair. It felt almost fake compared to the greyness of our town. The river in Cambridge felt like it belonged in the Lord of the Rings, whereas the river in our town was more like somewhere you might find some shopping trolleys or a dead body. After a good 10 minutes of randomly turning corners, we managed to find somewhere to park. Rain wasn't sure whether it was entirely legal, but decided not to worry too much about it. I worried a lot about it. But she was the driver, so I couldn't really say anything about it. Daniel appeared to have entered an entirely different dimension and wasn't quite registering anything we were saying. Some of the Cambridge colleges looked like palaces. I'd seen them in pictures, obviously, but they didn't really do the real things justice. It didn't even feel like the real world. We very quickly found ourselves a Starbucks. I take back what I said about everything being brown, said Rain, once we'd sat down. I haven't seen a single brown person since we got here. Even she looked sort of uncomfortable, which was fair enough because she really did stick out with her undercut hair and a pastel blue bomber jacket and platform trainers. Preach, I said. I sipped my coffee, but wasn't sure whether I was going to manage any of the sandwich I'd bought. Daniel had brought his own lunch, and it made me think of Ron Weasley on the train to Hogwarts. Sandwiches wrapped in cling film. Not that he was eating it. He was sitting entirely still, except for one leg which was bouncing up and down. Rain leaned back in her seat and stared at us for a moment. Then she said, "Well, I have a few things to say about this." "Please don't," said Daniel immediately. "Helpful things. Nothing you say will be helpful." "Then, not unhelpful things." Daniel gave her a look that said, "I want you to die." "Guys, I just think, like, if you two can't get into Cambridge, like, who actually can?" Both Daniel and I looked at her. "That's really not helpful," said Daniel. "Seriously, though," Rain held out her hands. "You two have been top of the year group since, what, like, year 7? And I bet you were top of your primary schools as well. Like, if you two can't get into Cambridge, then I don't really understand who would." We didn't say anything. "What if we mess up the interview, though?" I said, quietly. "Yeah," said Daniel.